Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you as we go off and running on Christmas week. Welcome to the Buckmaster Show. John, my buddy, engineering and producing the program on the other side of the glass. It is Monday, December the 18th, 2023. We are in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studio on 1030 KVOI, The Voice, Tucson's source for, actually only source right now, for local, live local news and talk on the Tucson radio scene. We have our worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com, also the place for all of our podcasts that we have done over the last 13 years. We'll begin year 14 on January the 2nd. Buckmaster Show Live Line for our telephone interview is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's get rolling on this Monday with our Monday One-on-One presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing. Family owned and run since 1985, Moe and the group, the wonderful family of his, specialize in custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, picture framing and hanging services, and hanging systems. That means Moe makes house calls. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and at moesgallery.com. This week's One-on-One interview features pollster Mike Noble. Mike is head of the Phoenix-based Noble Predictive Insights. That is a full-service market research, nonpartisan public opinion polling and data analytic firm. Mike joins us now on the live line. Hey, Mike, looking at your 7-year history here, and you really have grown. Mm-hmm. Before we start talking about the mood of Arizona voters and some of the polling you're doing, tell me a little bit about what it's like to have a polling business in this day and age, please.
Oh, it's fascinating. It's interesting having a public opinion research company in this day and age. It depends on the type of person you are. If you like change and you like adapting, which I do, I'm very entrepreneurial. And basically, it's a fun time to be in polling because it was interesting. Polling never really changed for about 5-6 decades there. But in the last 10 years, there's been a significant change, mainly due to, you know, how you're collecting your responses and how people interact with different modes of technology, you know, whether it's, you know, live caller to text message to, you know, opt-in online panel. There's all these various ways now because, like, folks that are, let's say, under the age of 40, good luck trying to contact them on a landline because they don't have one. And, you know, or the younger folks don't really like talking to people as much, but they'll text you all day. So it's been a lot of change. I think it's a really exciting time. And especially since Arizona is not only competitive, I mean, we're one of the most watched states in this upcoming election when it comes to what happens in Arizona, how it influences or impacts the national outcomes.
Is your vehicle mainly contacting people through their mobile device, or do you also go online a little bit too, Mike?
We do a little bit of everything. On our tracker poll, we do predominantly opt-in online panel, which works good for that case. But typically, it's more of a mixed mode approach. So you're catching some with, you know, on cell phones, with text messages, and then also online panel. To live callers. So it's kind of a catch-all approach these days in polling.
Mike Noble is with us, a pollster based in Phoenix. And Mike, I know our radio station and our radio group of 5 stations will be very happy to hear the news about you predict Arizona is about to be crushed by political advertising in 2024. Okay, give our radio group the good news, please.
Well, I guess when you look at the, you know, what's important or what should people be watching, look no further than following the money. You know, where's all the money going to be spent on political advertisements? And when you look at Arizona based on Ad Impact, a site that, you know, aggregates the different modes of broadcast, so TV, radio, connected TV, et cetera, those broadcast methods, that Arizona is actually ranked number 2 in the country for projected political broadcast spend. So $821 million. The only state ahead of us is our nemesis to the west over there in California. They're at $1.2 billion. But really what's driving California is 2 things. One is they have an open Senate race. due to late Democrat Senator Dianne Feinstein passing away. Also, they're like one of the largest economies in the world. So anyways, a lot of money to be spent there, but it's mainly in that Senate race. But also their media market's like triple the cost of a gross rating point as it is here in Arizona. So it's much more expensive to run ads. So arguably, Arizonans will see more ads, political ads, than any other state in the country. And we also had a 64% increase in broadcast spend from the last election cycle of this one.
What will the candidates be focusing on, Mike? Will they be focusing on the economy? And maybe you can give us kind of a snapshot of how Arizonans are viewing the economy right now.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. So the issues to look at. So in the like Republican primaries, for example, Republican primaries, immigration is going to be the most dominant issue, followed by jobs and economy, but more specifically inflation. But then when you look at the Democratic side, for them in their primaries, abortion will be leading the way, followed by jobs and economy and education. But then when you pivot over to the general election, I think jobs, it's going to be basically tied to two things, border security or immigration, and inflation and jobs and economy are going to be the two dominant ones in the general election. So under primaries, look for that. You'll absolutely be seeing those play out in the Democrat and Republican primaries, those issues leading the charge. But in the general election, immigration and jobs and economy / inflation are going to be the dominant ones people will be talking about.
What is your polling, Mike Noble, indicating about how Arizonans view the pocketbook issues right now? Do they feel confident about the economy? Are they concerned about perhaps a recession? What's your take?
Overall, for the near future, the current, the short-term outlook, they're not feeling too confident. I would say it's just slightly below average, I would say, is currently the mood. But when you look at future expectations of, you know, how is it going to look a year or a couple of years down the road, people get more optimistic. I'd say they're above average when it comes to their outlook. But it's not a doom and gloom. So the electorate's not like, oh, no, the economy's terrible. We're absolutely going to, you know, do bad. Because right now they see jobs, you know, jobs-wise, jobs they're pretty happy about. Unemployment's probably low. They're happy about the supply chain issues that are no longer as big of a pain point as they were 6 months or a year ago. But I think the biggest thing really driving the jobs and economy, the sour mood, is just basically the cost of goods, you know, gas, groceries, et cetera. Just everything is costing more now than it was. But then you talk to an economist, they're like, oh, but inflation, you know, the percentage is weaned off, or it's not as high. It's like, well, voters don't care about the percentage. They just know what they're buying before. Everything's now more expensive now, and prices haven't gone back down.
Let's talk about a couple of key issues. You said Republicans, certainly the border resonating with them, and then on the Democratic side, reproductive rights. Let's begin with the Democratic side. If there is an initiative about reproductive rights on the Arizona ballot, do you have any kind of sense of how that might play out, Mike Noble?
Yeah, that's a great question. So there's efforts to go put a pro-choice initiative on the ballot, which two things, if that lends to come to fruition, two things will happen. One is, okay, how's it going to impact turnout? I don't think it's going to really impact turnout too much because, frankly, in the presidential elections, turnout's really high already. So compared to a midterm, you know, now in our presidential year, right now, last presidential election here in Arizona was like 79.8%, or roughly 8 out of every 10 registered voters came out to vote. So I don't think it's going to impact turnout too much. I think it will be an advantage, though, to Democrats compared to Republicans, just because, one, the issue, the numbers are on their side when it comes to this issue. People are more pro-choice than they are pro-life at the end of the day when it comes to Arizona's electorate. And also, you notice that, you know, this issue, Democrats have this issue that pretty locked in with their messaging. For example, last election cycle, 33% of the ads that Democrats ran across the country were actually specifically on abortion or pro-choice.
Wow.
So they absolutely got this message dialed in. But Republicans, on the other hand, They're because of the division that's happening between kind of the traditional Republicans and the MAGA style Republicans. You know, I don't care what side you're on. That's just the reality that is currently happening. Because of this division, there's no kind of like central authority right now in the Republicans, so they don't really have a set position on it. They were trying to put together saying, hey, you know what, say 18 weeks was kind of the sweet spot when it comes to policy issues. But we saw with some of the special elections that happened in some of the states, such as like Ohio and some of those others that happened about a month ago, those pro-life efforts all went down in flames and all the pro-choice wound up winning. So Republicans don't really have, one, an answer to the issue, and B, there's no uniformity over there. So, you know, we got candidates. Basically, Republicans are just trying not to talk about the issue, which is very tough. And especially if it's on the ballot, it's going to really force them. Because you look at like even Blake Masters, Republican nominee for U.S. Senate last election cycle here in Arizona, his answer to the abortion portion when he pivoted to the primary of the general, he just deleted the entire position off his website. Which, that's one way to go about it. But at the end of the day, voters are going to be looking in the demographic groups it impacts, and basically anyone that's female, because it really impacts them more directly than it does males.
All right. We need to take the break, but I did mention Republicans and the border real quickly about that issue, Mike, and then we'll take our break and talk about some specific races after the break. But generally, Republicans, what do they want on the border? We keep hearing about a closed border. What do they want?
They just want something done. Just anything. It sounds funny, but you know, we've been talking about it for a decade, and you know, if you even look at on the you know, the news in the last 3 months, I mean, you just see, you know, train loads of them, just, you know, and just rivers of migrant caravans, et cetera, coming in. And at the end of the day, Republicans just want the border secured. They want something done about it. So whether it's a wall, whether you put National Guard troops down there, at the end of the day, I don't think they really care which way it happens. I think they just care about something happening, because it just seems like there's an inherent issue. And even Democrats are starting to notice, like, hey, this is a kind of a big problem, because you got to, you know, who's coming over the border, you know, and especially if they're criminals, if they are, you know, people with rap sheets or, you know, God forbid, terrorists, et cetera. You know, you need to have some type of security over there. And so Republicans are just fed up. Hence why you're going to see the vast majority of Republicans all be talking about immigration in the primaries.
All right, Mike Noble, stick around, Mike. Got another segment with you on our Monday one-on-one presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located right next to Copenhagen, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and at moesgallery.com. Don't forget, 1 week till Christmas. So this is your week to get up to Mona's Danish Bakery, make that order for your desserts on your Christmas table, your dinner rolls, and perhaps a Danish Kringle. I hope a Danish Kringle, because Mona's is the home of the Danish Kringle. They're located in northeast corner, Swan and Sunrise. Their website, monasdanishbakery.com. Our Monday one-on-one, interesting stuff with pollster Mike Noble. Be right back. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops, craft beer, and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is working with the Citizens Advisory Committee to prepare and present a new draft plan to the RTA board by December. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Thinking about a river cruise? Let Bon Voyage Travel guide you to choose the perfect cruise to complement your vacation dreams. River cruising has become more popular than ever, and we know you have so many options to consider when selecting the destination, cruise line, and ship. At Bon Voyage Travel, we provide a comprehensive presentation on the top tips for river cruises and have a team of specialists to assist you. Visit bvtravel.com and view our River Cruise 101 presentation today.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
This is Kate Delaney. Tune in later tonight as we talk about everything that happened throughout your day. Tonight at 10 on 1030 KVOI, The Voice.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show this Monday of Christmas week. It is our Monday one-on-one presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and at moesgallery.com. The one-on-one today is with Mike Noble. Pollster. He is the head of Phoenix-based Noble Predictive Insights, a full-service market research, nonpartisan public opinion polling and data analytic firm. Of course, Mike, people want to know about Trump, the Trump influence. How strong is it right now in Arizona? Let's begin with that.
Well, thanks for having me back. And the question, I think there's some background noise. Was it regarding Trump?
Yes.
In the presidential contest?
Yes, Trump. Go ahead.
Gotcha. Yeah, no, that's great. Well, that's one of the big reasons what's fueling the big spend that we're about to see here in Arizona is the battle for president. So the road to 270 and then also the U.S. Senate, the balance of power there and also the seat that we have going on. So when we look at the biggest one, the presidential contest, so not only the Republican primary is competitive right now, as in there's a lot of candidates in the field. However, when it comes to, you know, if the election were held today for the Republican primary, Trump would absolutely dominate everybody in the field. So currently Trump's at about 53%. If the election were held today, remember, there's like, you know, 12 candidates or so that are in there as options. And the next closest one is actually Ron DeSantis at 16%, Vivek Ramaswamy at 9%, and then Nikki Haley at 8%. And since our July survey, Trump actually got stronger. He went from 50 to 53%. So frankly, the indictments that happened against him, the four indictments, actually strengthened his position in the Republican primary. Ron DeSantis is actually who's kind of been in second place for a while now. He's starting to lose ground not only here in Arizona, but also in other states. We've seen, and the only one really getting momentum right now outside of Trump dominating is Nikki Haley. But again, she's still very far behind. So Trump is in a very solid position. If you were to, let's say, remove all those candidates and say, all right, let's just put Trump first, DeSantis, who's doing the best against him right now. Trump would win 68-32.
Wow. All right. So, how about Trump up against Biden? What does that show?
So in our latest polling, it actually shows Trump versus Biden. Trump's actually up by about 7 points roughly against Biden. I know it's interesting because not even back in July, Biden had a slight 1 point edge. And not only did Biden have the edge here in Arizona, but the other five battleground states. There's about six key states that are going to ultimately decide the election, Arizona being one of them. You know, Trump, Biden was up in all those, but actually New York Times, Siena pollster put out their polling about a week before we did on six of the states. And actually Trump was ahead in five of the six, including Arizona. They had Trump up five, and then we came out showing Trump up seven, but I'd say it's probably closer to five. But yeah, so it's kind of interesting flip that happened of everyone saying, oh, Trump's not electable. Biden, you know, Biden will, you know, he'll crush him, but it's not the case. It's actually the reality is they're actually just both terrible candidates, just terrible for two different reasons. But Biden's struggling because, mainly because he's in power right now. And also his job approval's abysmal. He's underwater by more than 20 points. When it comes to his job approval among Arizona voters, it's actually, I think, tied for the lowest job approval we've ever had on record with Biden right now.
A ton of people don't like either of them.
Correct. But here's the thing. That's the reality, is that it's an A-B choice. Like, you want the red pill or the blue pill? You're like, I don't like either of these pills. They're like, yeah, but these are your two choices, because third-party candidates, I mean, when's the last time any of those were competitive? I mean, the heyday was what, Ross Perot?
Yeah.
And he got 20-some-odd%. I mean, that's the best third parties have ever done, but yet they've really have gone down in their impact in the elections. They're down to, like, you know, on average, like 3% a third-party candidate will get in any contest. So it's not really a viable option. So you really have, you know, want red pill or blue pill, and they're both bad for just very different reasons, but yet voters still have to decide. And right now, you know, if the election were held today nationally, there's better odds than not that Trump would actually beat Biden.
What about Liz Cheney if she did decide to go with a third party candidacy? Would that take away Republican or Democratic votes, do you think?
That's a tough one.
Yeah.
It would probably
maybe equal.
It would probably take away some, yeah, actually maybe equal, because you have some of the, you know, the anti-Trump folks, or some of the you'd have those moderate Republicans, you would pull some of them, but also you could pull some Democrats that aren't as thrilled about Biden. It's just, you know, third party, the reality is they as of right now, they don't really have a viable chance of winning. They're really, the thing is, who would they be more of a spoiler for? Would they spoil more against the Republican candidate or the Democratic candidate? But right now, it's been really tough for third-party candidates. You've heard a lot of talk about it, but even Cornell West, he said he's running as a third-party candidate. He was on record saying that, yeah, I was going to run as third-party, but once I started looking at all the, you know, criteria and all the things that you have to do to become a third-party candidate, he's like, I'm not so sure about this. This seems like a lot of work.
A lot of work for maybe nothing. Yeah, let's talk about the independent Senator Sinema. She still has not indicated she is running. What's your take on that, Mike Noble?
Well, that's the million-dollar, you know, multi-million-dollar question right there, is that, you know, with Sinema, we don't know if she's running. And she technically doesn't really even have to announce that until about March or April timeframe when candidate signatures are due. The only issue is, or problem is, that because of the Arizona passed a law a few years ago that made, you know, the requirements for third party candidates for them getting on the ballot, they have to collect so many nominating signatures. Well, they increased that threshold kind of a little bit much higher for independents than it is for the partisans to get on the ballot. So they kind of raised that bar to make it tougher or more challenging. So she has to get like 400,000 signatures. It's a significant amount. And basically what I've been telling folks that ask me, like, because that's the question, is she running? Is she not? The biggest thing I tell folks to look out for is, like, look to see if she's collecting signatures. See if someone, you know, got approached, someone, you know, that, hey, sign this petition for Kyrsten Sinema. Is look for that. That'll be your tell, because she has to collect a significant amount of signatures. And I haven't heard yet from anyone that there have been signatures gathering going on for her. But that would be the thing to look out for, to tell if she is or is not, because the reality is no one knows if she's running or not. She's keeping those cards close to the chest.
Who is running? Who do we know is running? And what if she doesn't run?
Yeah, no, great question. So we unequivocally know who's running right now. So on the Democratic side, you have a Democratic Congressman, Ruben Gallego, who is running. He's the de facto nominee on the Democratic side. Really doesn't have any opponents in there. If he does, they're they don't have much of a chance against them. So Rubin's kind of the guy for the Democrats. On the Republican side, there's really only two announced candidates in that race. And you have who was initially the first one announced was Pinal County Sheriff Republican Mark Lamb, who's been in the race for a little bit. And then Carrie Lake just threw her hat in the ring, who previously ran for governor and, you know, went through her ballot challenges and stuff through the legal process with no avail. And now she's running for the Republican nomination. But the election were held today. Carrie Lake is kind of like the Donald Trump in the Republican primary, where she's sitting at about 40% or so, and Mark Lamb's sitting, you know, way down there, 14%. So basically, Carrie Lake's in the driver's seat on the Republican side. So if it were to be, let's say, Ruben Gallego versus Carrie Lake, who Lake's in the better position than Mark Lamb, basically you'd see that Ruben has about a 5-point edge over Carrie Lake, which is interesting because Ruben having like a 5-6 point edge over presumptive challenger of the Republican side, Carrie Lake, is that he's up by 5 or 6, but yet in the generic ballot. So when you're asking voters, hey, are you going to vote this year for, you know, a Republican or Democrat? Most likely Republicans have currently a 4-point advantage when it comes to the generic ballot.
Wow.
So, okay. Generically
got to run
soon. Up for Republicans. Yep. And then, you know, you put Ruben versus Lake, is that Ruben's doing definitely outpacing the generic ballot, meaning that he's just a bit of a stronger candidate and Lake is a little bit more damaged.
All right. Where can people find out about you, Mike, quickly?
Oh, just go to NoblePredictiveInsights.com or NoblePredictive on Twitter. And we're also on LinkedIn. But, you know, go check out there. We have a ton of information and resources on our website if you're into that type of stuff.
All right, pollster Mike Noble, thank you. Our one-on-one presented by Moe's Gallery.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. And your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
I've known the Chavez family for 35 years, and thanks to Chavez since 67, you won't find any soft, saggy cushions at the Buckmaster Bungalow. Chavez since 67 can restuff your cushions with new, firm, high-density foam. What a difference that makes. They also offer full upholstery services. Give them a call at 520-795-8032 or check out the website, ChavezSince67.com.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rialto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. This portion presented by Green Things in Zocalo Village. Green Things, your destination for living holiday gifts. And my goodness, over 20,000 poinsettias that were grown right here in Tucson at Green Things, 3384 East River Road, open daily. For sure, you'll want to get over there on before Christmas, so you can get some poinsettias. I've now got, let's see, three of them at the Buckmaster Bungalow, adding some holiday cheer. Their website, greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com. Our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management, for our telephone interviews. Time for our Buckmaster Show contributor on education, Dr. Robert Hendricks, who is a lifelong educator, served as superintendent of the Flowing Wells School District, associate professor emeritus, and associate dean of the UA College of Education, former Arizona Superintendent of the Year, remains very active, to say the least. His calendar is very, very full right now. Well, he's president of the Interfaith Community Services, ICS, head of that board of directors. ICS partners with over 120 faith communities, serving more than 52,000 individuals each year, and they do a lot of good work. Robert Hendricks, Bob Hendricks, good to see you.
Good to see you too, Bill.
Very busy time of year for ICF. You want to make sure that a lot of people who are in need will have at least some joy, right, in their holiday.
Right, and we have a very generous benefactor who has challenged us with any money that is given before the end of December will be matched dollar for dollar. And, you know, we've got that tax credit out there that we're eligible for. So anyone who wants to donate, I would encourage them to go on the website, icstucson.org, and make a donation. This is a tough time for people. We're seeing increased number of people in line for food and other services, and we hope that people will consider us. And there are a lot of good charities out there, nonprofits, but we think we're pretty broad in our services, and we hope that people will consider us.
All right, Interfaith Community Services, ICS.org.
Yes.
All right. We knew the pandemic had taken, that education had taken a huge hit. We just really have been learning in the recent week or so about how bad it is, Bob.
Yeah, we've talked about this before, and it is bad. There's mm-hmm. no question that we took a major hit in the educational scene with COVID. But the part of the story that we really haven't talked about is how it has affected other populations worldwide. In fact, it turns out that we're not the only nation that's has fallen behind. The setbacks of nations all over the world, rich and poor, multitude of industrialized nations have really been hit by this setback. And we know this because there's a standardized test that's given every 3 years. It's called the International Student Assessment, and they take a look at populations of students worldwide, and the sampling shows that we have increased low performance all over the globe in math, in reading, and science. So we tend to focus on ourselves, and obviously, you know, that's the major priority. But just to know that this has affected many, many students in the educational environment around the world is a bit of a surprise, maybe because we really haven't talked about it before.
Some countries that had been Asian countries had been real leaders. I wonder if they've been hit hard, too.
Everywhere.
Even Finland, which
even
is
in Finland, and
has such a great education system that people
right,
point to.
Right, and India, which has always prided itself
on
with
a great education system.
Great education, yeah. Engineering, particularly in the math and science area, they've shown some decreased scores. And it's going to take a while to bounce back. And, of course, we have... We're putting a lot of money into tutorial services, remedial education, and I think that's helping. We're probably putting more money in that area than some of the other countries in the world. But we, again, not to minimize our situation based on comparing it to other countries, because we were low, competitively low against other countries before any of this happened. So when I say other countries are lagging behind, it's relative to
the
serious case that we have here. But there's another report that just came out that I think is really interesting, and it's it comes from the Aspen Institute, which is a well-known foundation without political bias that takes a look at the straight facts of where we are in education. And if we have time, we can talk about that, or do we need to take a break?
Is that the think tank?
The think tank, yes.
Yeah, well, we're not up to the break yet, so why don't you hit on some of the highlights?
Well, researchers took a look at a broad sampling of parents, and they talked to them about the signals they're getting from teachers and schools about their children's progress. Now, remember, we've just talked about the... low achievement, declining achievement. Well, surprisingly, the researchers found that parents that they talked to, by and large, expressed little concern about lasting academic damage from the pandemic. They thought, by and large, that their children were doing very well in school, and that's based on their social adjustment, their social life in school, athletics, club membership, all that's very positive. They looked at it from the standpoint of the grades that their children were getting, and also the feel-good attitude that they were getting, the vibe they were getting from teachers in conferences who said they were doing fine to great.
Okay, everything's rosy, right?
Very, very, very rosy.
I do want to talk, even before the break, out of a couple of minutes. Speaking of worldwide, the teacher shortage here in Arizona and other places is attracting candidates now from everywhere.
Exactly. In fact,
India, the Philippines, you name it.
I had coffee this morning with one of our local superintendents, and he said that they still are dealing with vacancies, teacher vacancies, at this point in time in the year. Now we're going into the second semester, and there are still openings in classrooms in the metropolitan Tucson area. Now rural areas, relatively speaking, are in much worse shape because it's very hard to attract particularly young people to live in a more isolated environment. But generally, teachers are going to gravitate to metropolitan areas. Phoenix area, Tucson area are major magnets for bringing teachers in. There have been some positive increases in salary schedules, and yet there are openings. They're bringing in substitutes. We've learned that some of the rural districts in Arizona, just as in other areas of the country, are starting to import employment from other countries. And that's a sign of some real concern. So it's not just money. It's about teachers wanting to be in this business. I think a lot of people have gotten kind of used to the stay-at-home model,
mm-hmm.
and maybe a little more reluctant. And I'm not talking about just education. I'm hearing about it in the just general employment field. People don't necessarily want to come to work.
No. Let me ask you, and then we'll take the break, about the bond elections. They all passed in local schools.
Yes.
Can you remember a time where there was across-the-board passage like that with our local schools? It's quite an endorsement by voters.
I'm amazed at that.
Yes.
And I'm amazed in an incredibly positive way that that now bond issues are easier to pass.
Yes.
Than overrides, because overrides tend to be salary related.
Yeah.
Whereas bonds tend to be the brick and mortar kind of
thing. The infrastructure program. Yeah.
You can see what's being built and what's being supported. So bonds are a little bit easier to pass, but still it's not a sure shot. And so it was really, really good news that those passed across the board.
All right. We'll have more with our education contributor, Dr. Robert Hendricks. It's the Buckmaster Show on this first Monday of the Christmas week. We'll be right back.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The Regional Transportation Authority Plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA is collected throughout Pima County and averages more than $100 million in revenue each month. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation improvements in the region. The RTA is preparing a new 20-year plan for public review. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates. Nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in Southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in Southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
This is John Trout. Catch me every weekday morning at 5 before Wake Up Tucson with America in the Morning. Breaking news, weather, politics, and sports on 1030 KVOI, The Voice.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. This portion presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. It's just about a three-hour drive over to Silver City. Check out their website, southwestnewmexico.org. You'll be very tempted with all the recreation activities, great places to stay, and some great places to eat. The New Mexican cuisine, some great places in downtown Silver City. So lots going on. The holiday season, all the Victorian architecture in Silver City decorated for the holidays, looking very Christmassy. The Buckmaster Show contributor on education, Dr. Robert Hendricks, with us in studio. We were talking about the pandemic. We've talked about the teacher shortage, a little bit on the bond elections. I grew up in school a million years ago with something called cursive writing. It was mandatory at the time. I'm sure you did it as well. And it may be having a comeback.
Yeah, it's an interesting dilemma. One thing,
More and more children cannot read cursive. So we talked about
what?
Reading cursive and also being actually able to write it. And this has kind of appeared in a lot of different ways, particularly one case in California where a history teacher used the original document of the Declaration of Independence and discovered that many children who could read could not read that document because it's in cursive. It's like a different language.
What?
And so this prompted California to take a look at their requirements again. Actually, cursive was on the Common Core standards since, you know, the beginning of that. And in 2010, it was removed. So it's no longer a Common Core standard. However, there are 21 states that require the teaching of cursive handwriting, or as we know it, penmanship.
Yeah, penmanship.
That's increased over the past 5 years. It was 14 states.
Uh-huh.
Now it's 21 states.
I think it should be every state, my own
and
opinion.
So, you know, the argument is, you know, the emergence of keyboarding and smartphones.
Mm.
Legibility is reduced to essentially printing.
Mm.
And that's what many students do. That's what many adults do. And the new generation Z ultimately doesn't even see penmanship as a useful tool.
Mm.
And prints when necessary, but most of the time is clicking away on the keys.
Mm.
But it's making a comeback, and Arizona is one of those states that's hung in there and has said that it's going to be a requirement. They start teaching cursive writing in third grade, and based on the Arizona requirements, by fifth grade, students should master the art, and I use the word art, the art of cursory writing, and whether they use it after that or not, many people say that when they go to middle school or when they go to high school, that practice is not reinforced. And so maybe they learned it, maybe they practiced it, but if it's not reinforced and if it's not continued to be practiced, it's just going to go away.
Hmm.
Now, there are three styles of writing, three cursive styles. One of them is the Palmer method.
Mm-hmm.
Another is the Neelian method. And the third is the Zanner-Blosser method.
Mm.
Most teachers opt to, and by the way, the state doesn't prescribe which method you use,
mm-hmm.
but most teachers use the Deneelian method because it tends to be less slanted and easier to teach. There are fewer rules.
Mm.
So, probably you and I learned the Palmer method.
Well, I can still see the chart.
Yes. And there was a slant.
Yes.
And
a little bit of a slant.
And
I still use it when I write, when I sign checks, and I'm old-fashioned.
Yeah.
I don't know what these people do. What do they do? Print their name when they sign a check?
I think the check is useless.
I guess so. I mean, I'm so old-fashioned.
You don't need a check to write a check anymore.
Old-fashioned, traditional guy here.
So if you're a forensic person looking at the penmanship, the big difference between these three different methods,
mm-hmm.
One of the biggest clues is how you write the Q, because the Q is angled. Write a Q here. I'm going to tell you if it's the tail.
I go a straight Q.
It's the tail, and that's the Palmer tail.
Oh,
so there's a
wow.
different tail for each of the Qs.
Oh my goodness.
And, but it's also how the letters flow and how they connect. And so, as I said, Danelian tends to have fewer rules, and it's easier to teach. So that's the one that teachers tend to use. But when we argue the pros and cons of whether you should teach cursive writing or not, ask a grandmother who writes a birthday card to their child.
Yeah.
It's going to be in cursive.
Yes.
And the child might not be able to read message. Or ask a history teacher. You know, as I said, Declaration of Independence is an example.
Mm.
Constitution is another example. Many of the historic documents are written in cursive. And even if you're collecting baseballs and your favorite player signs that ball, it's going to be in script.
You wouldn't know who it was.
And so,
Babe Ruth.
And students, struggle to read that. And so proponents say, hey, it also promotes good eye-hand coordination. Critics say it's a waste of time. And the Pew Research Institute says 85% of Americans today own a smartphone, and they use it as their primary means of communication. Why teach cursive?
Okay, I disagree with all that. Yeah. All right, quickly, need for secondary education increasing?
Well,
And you have 2 minutes.
It's interesting because the gold standard, particularly for the public universities, is to give the ACT, the American College Test. Those scores in 2022 are the lowest they have ever been. Hit rock bottom. 23s aren't out yet, but it's probably going to be worse. And so the question is, what do we do about that? Barely 20% on the ACT, barely 20% of students met the college readiness levels in English, math, and reading. Will these students still graduate from high school? Absolutely. Yes, they will. And where will they go? Will they go to community college? Will they go to a four-year public institution? Will they be accepted? Yes, they'll be accepted, and there will be remediation that will have to be part of that experience. But the economic model is that college is not going to turn down those students. You can't survive with only 20% of those people qualifying to go to school.
Yeah.
So you're going to have to do something. And I've said this before, Bill, the community college is the new high school.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
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 And that's what's going to happen. It's very discouraging to me.
Yeah, that is very discouraging. Speaking of higher education, Dr. Robbins will be my guest at the top of the show. We have 10 minutes tomorrow with President Robbins at the top of the program. And, of course, we'll be asking him about the financial situation at the U of A. And maybe we'll work in some other questions as well. All right. On behalf of Dr. Hendricks and John, engineering and producing our program on the other side of the glass, Bill Buckmaster, wishing everyone well. We'll see you in about 23 hours with the Tuesday edition of Buckmaster. Have a great week.